Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to the Future Sox podcast, part of the Just Baseball Media Network. My name is Ian Eskridge. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. James Fox. Tonight, we will be getting into Murakami is coming to the South Side, of course. Carlos Rodriguez hired as the assistant GM for the another assistant GM for the White Sox. Bonus pools, full coaching staff announced. Let's get to the big news of the day. Munetaka Murakami signed by the Chicago White Sox for 2 years, $34 million. Your thoughts, James?
Yeah, what do you, he says he's Mune. That's what he likes to call it. Mune. Yeah, he seemed very, very pleasant. So that'll be fun. Yeah, I know, like, the whole thing was weird. We can get into like my last 48 hours, but I mean, even like, has anybody ever like misjudged like a marketplace more than this one? Like, just like MLB insiders, writers, whatever. Like, when you first heard about this guy, it was like he's getting $200 million. And then all the stuff came out that was like, you know, about all the issues and like some of the fake stuff about he was in the first, it was just like weird. And now, like, seeing what he actually did, like, makes sense. Cause I do think he's a little risky, and like, we'll get into it, obviously. You know, like, if you're the Red Sox and like you need this guy to produce like in April and May, I understand like why you weren't like knocking the door down to like throw money at him, but like for the White Sox at this price, like it makes total sense.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing, so, you know, the big concerns out there are the in zone contact and whiff rate. And, you know, we've seen different varying views on it, whether or not, you know, the worries are overblown, or, you know, you look at the stats and yeah, I mean, it doesn't look great with the whiff rate. But I find it very interesting. You know, in 2022, he wins the Triple Crown over there with like 56 home runs. And after that, and his team has been terrible for, you know, since that year. So, I mean, is it possible that he feels like he's got the entire weight of his organization on his back, so he's trying to hit 5-run home runs every time he goes up to bat? I don't know.
Right. Your thoughts? And there's like the run producer thing. I mean, we hear that with the college, like we heard that a lot with Jack Caglione. At least I did, where they're like, oh, he swings all the time, but he doesn't strike out. And it's like, well, yeah, he swings all the time because he has to drive in Florida's runs, like that sort of thing. So yeah, I mean, I could see that. Look, like it's going to be a high K rate. Like, this dude's going to K a ton. Some people have said that, you know, obviously the 20 to 80 scale that we use, you know, like it's like basically 90 grade raw power. So like, does he have enough power to overcome some of these other things and he's just awesome? Yeah, possibly. Like, very, very possibly. 28% K rate, like, in Japan. It's probably going to be, like, similar or more here. What you were talking about, 73% in-zone contact rate, which is, like, it would be like second, it would be second lowest in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
So that's, like, essentially, like, how much contact are you making, like, on pitches, like, that are strikes, basically. And it should be a lot more than that. Now, look, it sounds like when he does hit the ball, like, it goes over the fence. So, like, that's the thing. And he walks, too. It's not like he's just, like, some dude that's, like, up there hacking. 90th percentile exit velo is good, which would have been fifth in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And here's the other one that's interesting. And I think this is, like, if Ryan Fuller talks or some of these guys talk, he would have been first in Major League Baseball in hard hit rate. So this dude just, you know, beats the heck out of the ball. And there are some issues because, I think he's probably first base DH. But he's a lefty and it's not our money and we should enjoy this because it's going to be super fun.
Yeah, the one thing that I have at first base is that, ideally most of the time they try and get a left-handed first baseman, or at least a lot of people think that's a good way to go there. So there is that. I wonder how with him being a third baseman, I'm not worried about the glove so much at first base. I don't know. Until we see him playing first base on the reg here, I don't really know how to react to having him there as opposed to, moving Vargas over there, or whatever they were, any other plan they might possibly have for first base.
Well, so Passan said he's playing first.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my guess is like Vargas has to be better than he is like at third, but like this guy can't be worse than Sosa at first base. Can he? There's no way.
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, like, I mean, come on.
Generally,
like,
when you come from the NPB, your defensive fundamentals are going to be at least, basic enough that you can hang out anywhere and be okay. So
right. I mean,
like to think that,
like, even like
so much.
Like Tim Elko is a good first baseman.
But he is a good first baseman.
Yeah, but he's not great. I mean, they just like didn't have great first base defense anyway. So like when your alternative is some lefty that like mashes, Yeah, Doug, that's a good point. Where is Uncle Ted? Like they signed like some lefty maven and Uncle Ted's not here. But so it sounds like press conference tomorrow morning at 11 at the rate. So he gets a $1 million signing bonus. $16 million in 2026, $17 million in 2027. He's a free agent after 2027, so there is no like arbitration. He hits unrestricted free agency again. The White Sox have to pay $6.5 million to the Yakult Swallows, his team in Japan. So this dude, he has 246 career homers in MPB, which works for me, right?
Pretty good.
And something we kind of talked about via text today, he's not eligible for like one of those PPI selections because you have to be on two of the three prospect lists, like Baseball America, ESPN, or Pipeline. And Pipeline and Baseball America don't put like professionals on there anymore. So like if it were like a bonus pools guy, they would. Like Roki Sasaki was on there, but if it's like one of these free agent guys, they don't put him on there. So
if it had been 10 years ago, he would have been optioned.
He can win Rookie of the Year though. So for like gamblers, right? Like you could go on DraftKings or something and like bet him to win Rookie of the Year if you wanted to. The White Sox aren't going to get anything for it.
Yeah,
if it happens. Super bummer. Yeah, like if it happens, but they could for Braden Montgomery if he's up soon enough.
Yeah, I think if. I looked in my email. I think Uncle Ted said that he is still mourning John Means Achilles.
Oh my God. That's
why he's not here.
That sucks for that guy, though. He was like, going to sign that day.
Yeah.
Like he said he had an agreement with somebody.
Yeah. Awful.
And he's like, hurt again.
I feel for that. Yep.
It's like, oh, geez. But
yep.
Yeah. So people keep saying this. Like Scott said it. Somebody else. Like, so people are already talking about trading this guy. Like, a lot of people are going to be surprised by this take from me, but like, you know, because most people, I think, were ready for like me to say something like that. Like, what are we like? Let's find out if he's good first. Like, because there's a chance he's not good, but there's also a chance that like he is good. Like, they have nothing on their books in 2027. Like, I told Ian before the show, like, you mean to tell me if this guy hits 75 homers in 2 years, like they're not going to try to keep him when like Rock Chalowski and Colson Montgomery and Kyle Teal are also on the team? Like, they're, this is just, you know, it's a 2 year hedge for sure for him and for them. But I don't know that he's like automatically gone 2 years from now. Like, I don't know. Like, you can think like that if you want to, like, fan how you want to fan, but like, I'm just like not worried about that at all.
Yeah. I mean, I had this conversation with my dad actually, before I hopped on here. You know, if he goes out and hits 70, 75 home runs here over 2 years, and I mean, it's pretty much at that point, you're looking at a guaranteed like $200 million. And just going off of all of the history that I have with this franchise, I'm going to say that they wouldn't re-sign him, but you never know. You know, I mean, I would assume that they would try and keep, you know, if one of these younger prospects hits, who they're going to have control of for years, that they would much more rather funnel that money to one of those guys than to a free agent. But I mean, I guess we'll see, huh?
Yeah. I also like that he's like young and fun. You know, like I would have been fine with like Ryan O'Hearn. Like they just like need somebody. This is like a way better idea than that, you know? So yes, yeah. They can. Like, people are asking, they can give him a qualifying offer in 2 years if the system is still in place. Like, you know, remember, like, we don't know what that's going to look like with a new CBA in place.
Fair enough.
So, I mean, my guess is that winter, the QO system will be in place probably regardless, I think, because it'll happen like right away. So, yeah, I mean, you give him a qualifying offer, you get a second round pick if he walks, like, whatever. Like, that logistically, yes, like that's possible. But I mean, look, there's no reason for like us to not just like root for this guy to be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely not. I don't want, I mean, if he's good, we shouldn't want to trade him. You know, that shouldn't be the de facto response to one of our players being good with the contract coming to an end, is that we should be getting ready to deal him to somebody else to get another guy that we don't know
exactly
is going
to
hit.
Like, to me, like, it's a different conversation than like if the White Sox were to sign Pete Fairbanks right now, right? And you're in fourth place at the trade deadline and you can get like a couple of top 100 prospects, then like you always trade a bullpen guy even if you're signing him to close to be better. With a guy like this, it just, I don't know, it just like doesn't really make any sense to me. I kind of knew that we were going to go right to that though, because like obviously, right, like we get scared of who the owner is, and this is like not, it's kind of like Abreu but not really. Like, look, I don't think this guy is that good, and it's not that much money, but it is funny when like sometimes Jerry just decides to like strike and do weird things. And I think this was like one of those times. There's Uncle Ted.
There he is. Got his left-handed hitter. So Chris brings this up and he says, if he mashes this year, couldn't they resign him after 2026 to a larger contract? Yeah, they could.
I don't know why he'd do that, but like,
yeah, yes, that's the issue.
Sure. Yeah. They could. Yeah. And it's like Casey Close. The thing that I'm curious to really find out tomorrow is like, we're going to get into the Carlos Rodriguez hire. How much did he have to do with it? How much of this is like a David Keller special? There's been some speculation. Like, David Keller's been spending a lot of time in Japan. Apparently, like, the White Sox hired a scout from Japan. I think one of like, I don't know if it's like, I don't know, an outside factor, but we kind of talked about this. Like, I don't know if I'm more excited about the player or more excited about what it means for the future that they're like back in Asia finally. Like, they needed to get their footprint back there to know that like guys could be an option for them, right? And like lots of times, like, yeah, the big boys go to New York or they go West Coast, right? Because it's like easier to get to Japan. But like, there's no reason the White Sox like can't be in on these like secondary type guys like this, like from Japan. They hadn't done it since what, Shingo and Iguchi.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you like what you thought the amount of influence that Shingo would have for Murakami, with it being a team that he pitched for, and obviously with Jerry, he's got some history there.
I mean, honestly, I hadn't thought about it until like he signed today. I was never like, oh, Shingo's his manager, like he's coming here, like because like I mean, I'm sure he had positive things to say. Like those, you know, those dudes had a lot of success here. Like when they were here, like when the team was good, and when the team's good, like it's fun over there, you know? So yeah, I'm sure it was fine. The uniforms are cool. Like kids care about stuff like that. Yeah, I'm curious to see, just for the whole thing, to see what he has to say. This is like a lot more interesting than, what I thought they were going to do. I'd feel a little bit worse about it if it was what we were kind of talking about initially. Like if this was like $100 million deal, it's not our money, obviously, but I do think there are some red flags like in the profile. And I think for this price, who cares about those red flags? Because I think he's going to hit dingers.
Yeah, I think so too. The Brian's chick here says every team under 500 has to ship all their players to New York and LA. Every trade deadline is becoming the most frustrating thing. I don't disagree.
Yeah.
It's hard to watch.
Right. It's annoying.
What was the other? We got Japanese Babe Ruth. It's true.
Oh my God. It's like the Cuban Otani. We have him too.
No, that's not, I mean, you know, like at least, you know,
at least this guy's good.
I mean, I hope so, you know. I mean, you know, of course we will find out.
He's at least fun. Like here's the thing, like he's at least gonna hit bad pitching.
You would think so.
Remember some of the stuff they said about Abreu? Like when they said, like I remember like they're like, oh, he can't hit like nasty sliders. Like it's like, okay, and nobody can, like
really, yeah.
the best players in baseball feast on like 3, 4, and 5 starters and bad bullpens. Like I mean, like nobody hits. That's why the playoffs are so hard, because nobody hits awesome pitching. what are we talking about?
So pretty much everybody that I kind of think is realistic thought that the White Sox would be priced out on Murakami here, you know, and just going by that, whenever anybody would mention Murakami signing with the White Sox, basically you and I would say the exact same thing, which was probably not, you know, like you figure if he's going to get 740, which was like the most recent one, I was like, there's no way the White Sox are going to spend $140 million. Early on in the process, when people were saying, oh, this guy's probably going to get 10-200 or something like that, or 10-250 or something, we obviously said, no, probably not. So you had an interaction yesterday that changed your thoughts on this whole thing. Do you want to go into that?
Yeah. So it's been just like very strange for me. So I think like last week, like I actually talked to a White Sox beat writer that everybody knows, Scott Merkin. And I learned that Scott Merkin has a Japan guy, which I got to step up my game. Like Merk has a Japan source. Like I feel like I need a Japan source too, but no. So he kind of said like, you know, the guy was like wishy-washy and like wouldn't give him a solid answer on it. And like, he found that weird. Right. And then as like a couple days went by, it's like, okay, yeah, they're not in. And look, nobody reputable was out there saying like White Sox Murakami. There were a couple of things like on ESPN, like David Schoenfeld said it, but like, he's also not a reporter, like he's a writer, and he just like predicted it. And his whole thing was like, oh, they have no payroll space. Like that would be cool. Which like, isn't really a report. And those are all the things that there were. And then there were like random Twitter accounts like linking and stuff. But I mean, like there was really like nothing out there. So I reached out to a source that's been good to me like over the years. And it's like not somebody that works for the team, obviously, but just like somebody who's known a lot of stuff that's like I've used as a source and whatever. Right. And he kind of told me like what this was, what yesterday was Saturday. So this is like Friday. He's like, yeah, like it doesn't sound like they're in on Murakami. Like they might have checked in, but like it's like not going anywhere. So then I was under the impression that that was true, like based off of like some other people I talked to, beat writers, this sort of thing. So then I went to Twitter, of course, and I'm like, I don't think they're involved in this market, which turned into this whole big thing because there's stuff all over the fringes of Twitter that are like, that says otherwise, right? And people are like, well, everyone else says they are. And I'm like, well, like, I don't really know what that means. Like, I don't know who everyone else is. There's like random accounts saying they are, like, you know, congratulations, right? So this same guy messages me yesterday morning. I was like, hey, bad info on the Murakami thing. They're in, type of, you know, whatever. And at that point, I'm like, well, like, I'm already screwed here if they sign him. Like, I'm going to be wrong, and people love dunking on me when I'm wrong. So, like, whatever. Like, this is fine. Like, I'll just take it, right? So then I get a little bit more info from this person who thinks that, like, hey, this is actually happening, and speculated that, like, that, you know, like, we see what the AAV was, right? So they speculated that it would be, like, the biggest deal in team history, 580, something like that, right? So obviously it's a two-year, $34 million deal. That didn't happen. But they still signed him. So yesterday at 5:45, like, as you can see on the screen, like, I texted Ian, Elijah, and Dylan. Like, I was very busy last night. Like, I went out to dinner with my wife. I had like a Christmas party. And I'm like, hey guys, just like FYI, if this happens, like, I just kind of want you to be prepared for it, type of thing. So, you know, like, I wrestled with like doing more and like digging and reporting more, but I didn't. And, you know, like, it's fine. Like, I can just be like some idiot on Twitter, but, you know, we kind of talked about this a little bit yesterday that it was possible.
I mean, once again, I mean, we've gone over this before, like the last time that people tried to dunk on you. What was that one for? Trying to remember.
There was like the Clevenger thing.
The Clevenger one was the last one. It's like, tell me you don't understand sources without telling me you don't understand sources. Like, if a source tells you something and it's somebody that you trust, that's what you're going to go with. And just because the opposite happens or something changes in between when you tweet it and when something happens, like, it doesn't mean that.
Yeah.
I mean, it really doesn't mean anything.
Well, so I knew yesterday morning when Bruce Levine mentioned it on 670, I was like, oh God, I'm way wrong here. Like, I'm like, Bruce mentioning like, oh yeah, I've heard the White Sox in on him. And I'm like, oh Jesus. So then, you know, like, I send this text to you guys at 5:45. And then it was like during the Bears Packers game, which we don't have to get into, Ian, that the tweet came out from what, Feinsand and Merkin. So as soon as Merkin's mentioned, I'm like, oh, this thing's happening. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was like one of those things. So then, you know, I'm like, okay. So I was honestly like expecting this today. I didn't know that it'd be like 9:30 this morning or whatever it was, but I thought that this would be like a thing today that would gradually escalate. Like, White Sox, one of the teams in, they're serious, and then it would get announced, and then it was just kind of announced this morning. So,
yeah. Bring this up here. Thank you for the super chat, Trey. Trey says it's Mune season.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think the bottom line too is like I love all you guys. I love doing this every week. I love Twitter. Like, I'm wrong all the time. But like Ian and I aren't reporters. Like I have a career. Like, you know, like it's like one of those things, right? Where it's like, oh, you need to like do something else. It's like, like, I'll do whatever I want. And yeah, like, it's like,
you worry
this
about yourself.
This is fine. Like, whatever. I'm sorry that I was wrong on Twitter. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. I mean, just every time it happens, I'm just like, why are, like, I don't understand. Like, I just don't understand the mentality of going after somebody on Twitter.
Well, but I also don't want to like do the media literacy thing, you know, like not everything you read on the internet's true. I like really try to be careful with I have buddies that'll send me like, is this true? I'm like, I mean, if you think like, you know, MLB Scoops like 74865 is like credible, then yeah, like maybe it's true. But like, come on guys, like what are we doing here?
I mean, I'm just saying Katy Perry's booty hole wet butt 23.
No, I mean,
nobody was buying into that, right?
I mean, it clearly happens, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the header in my Twitter profile is like me breaking like the Luis Robert signing. Like, I'm a nobody, you know? Yes, like, I picked up a lot of followers like since then, right? But whatever. Like, at that time, like I was nobody. And like sometimes like you get lucky and like you know, and then you meet people after that. But like, yeah, I mean, it's stuff like this happens all the time.
Yeah. I'm just going to throw this out here because it's something that I've been working on since I started at Future Sox. We are 9 people away from 20,000 followers. So if you are not following us on Twitter, please go over there and give us a follow, please. I would appreciate it. Just for my own personal sanity, it's something that I wanted to get done before the end of this year. And we have been hanging out at like 19,970 for, you know, between there and 50 with like bot accounts getting shed.
Yeah, we just need people to like follow Future Sox with their burner accounts.
That's yeah, exactly.
All the burner accounts that have told me for like 24 hours how much of an idiot I am. Those people should follow Future Sox.
Yep, exactly. All right. So would you like to move on to the next biggest news of the week?
Yeah, we should get into other. I mean, look, I feel like we're gonna be talking about Murakami probably again after this, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, it'll come up, of course. And especially it should come up because the new assistant GM that was hired, Carlos Rodriguez, he is the, you know, he has been the director of international scouting for the Rays. He was the director of Latin scouting for them. He was the VP of player development and international scouting. And he's, you know, he's been a scout for the Rays and the Blue Jays as well. So he's going to kind of have his fingers in the international market here. So let's go ahead and talk about Carlos Rodriguez.
Yeah. So this is going to sound mean. Cause like, look, I like the Chris Getz thing, right? Like getting into like Getz and if he's good at this or whatever. Like I'm pretty happy with the job he's done. Dating back to us talking about, like, we didn't really know what the hire would look like. And Getz is like either convinced all these people that he knows what he's doing or like, you know, he's pretty good at this and hired good people. I think Carlos Rodriguez might be more qualified than your GM is. And like, look, like if you take that negatively, like that's fine. Like he was a finalist for the Cubs job that went to Carter Hawkins. He's been a finalist for other jobs. He was just interviewing for the Yankees international director job. And he like turned that down and came here instead as an assistant general manager under Chris Getz. Like my guess is like, this is a future GM and potentially soon. And the fact that he came here should like people should feel good about that. I think if it was a random hire from the Rays organization, like we should feel good about it, right? Like, but this guy's like super well respected. And I know like what happened to Wander Franco is like disturbing, right? But I mean, this guy led the charge on Wander Franco when he was like, you know, 13 or 14 or whatever, you know. And yeah, so Carlos Rodriguez was notably on all those lists, right, that are like, these guys are the next GMs or the next baseball. And then, like, something happened, and, like, he didn't get one of those jobs. And then he, like, left the Rays willingly over the – I remember seeing that specifically. I was like, oh, Carlos Rodriguez left the Rays. Like, that's interesting. Like, I wonder what he's going to do. And then I kind of heard from somebody earlier this week that he was being hired in some capacity for the White Sox. And then, you know, reached out to some people, and then Sox Machine basically had the same story and reported it. And then, you know, the Sox announced it like the next day. So yeah, like another front office lieutenant. I'd love to know how involved he was like in this push for Murakami. You know, pretty sure David Keller was too, but you know, so yeah, just another smart dude in the front office is pretty good.
Yeah. I'm going to bring this one up right here from Robert. It says, do Rodriguez and Barfield have the same title? Technically, yes, they do. But the way I kind of look at this, you know, like I work at a casino, we have vice president of slots. We have vice president of food and beverage, vice president of table games. We got vice presidents of all sorts of stuff. But they all report to the AGM and the GM. So I think it's just like kind of one of those things where there's just, you know, these guys are of equal stature and their vote says, you know, the same amount as the other guy with that same AGM title, but they still are underneath, you know, underneath the GM. So that's just my guess.
Yeah. Well, and it does seem like David Keller is going to do, like, he does a lot of scouting. He's been in Japan a lot. And it does seem like Rodriguez is going to oversee, like, finishing the, you know, the new Dominican Academy. That's, like, going to be part of his purview. I do think it was, like, interesting. So our friend Erin Santana was let go from the org. She was awesome. Like, she did, like, all the cultural stuff and classroom stuff with, like, the Latin kids. That position was, like, eliminated. So my guess is, you know, this has, like, something to do with that probably, too. Like, I'm guessing Rodriguez, like, has some system, like, you know. So
now,
also,
now that kind of makes sense to me because like everybody said nothing but awesome things about Erin. So I was pretty surprised when that came.
Yeah,
out.
Me too. That was weird. And then Jin Wong. So they have three assistant GMs, which isn't like uncommon. You know, I mean, the one thing that's different with the Sox is like Chris Getz is the GM and he has three assistant GMs, you know, and then somebody said Mahler, like, yeah, like Brian Mahler is like that. Former Navy SEAL, and then they have like Bannister for pitching and Fuller for hitting and Gene Watson for you know player personnel, and they just got all these guys. So yeah, I mean, they're all doing different, like Jin Wong's assistant GM, but he does contracts, you know, like Josh Barfield's assistant GM, he's basically like the number two in command in the organization, you know. And then we'll see what Carlos Rodriguez is doing, but you know, he chose Chicago over other offers. So I think that's good.
Yeah. I'm pretty, I'm kind of surprised / blown away here that these guys keep coming here to the White Sox after all the things that we've heard about the White Sox.
Yeah. I mean,
these guys keep coming here.
Yeah. I mean, people must like, I mean, Chris Getz, I mean, so I heard him on last week. I think he was on with Mullion Haw. And like, he was funny, you know, like Chris, you know, like Chris Getz took a beating when he got the job and like, well, rightfully so probably. Right. But like, I think he's funny. Like, I think people kind of like hanging out with Chris Getz. Like, I think he lets people do their jobs. Like, and you know, like very clearly, like they're paying these people enough money to like come here. And I do think we've talked about this, like people like starting things like from the ground floor and like watching it like build up. So yeah, I think so. Trey brought up, we'll get into this later, like Yoiker Fajardo was traded again tonight for Wilson Contreras, and he said that he'll be a top 10 prospect in the St. Louis system by July. Oh, Contreras, my friend, pull up the MLB pipeline list for the Cardinals and
number
see
nine.
And see where he's slotted right now, actually. So
already number nine. Already number nine. I'm a spoiler for you. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
This is Michael Rosenbaum. Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
So speaking of, you know, how I just mentioned that, you know, I'm kind of surprised that we keep on getting these guys coming to the White Sox from other organizations that are guys who are on the rise and guys that have a good resume and also look like they're on their way going somewhere in their life. The White Sox announced the full coaching staff this week, and one of the guys that they announced was the new assistant pitching coach, Bobby Hearn, who's the new 29 years old assistant pitching coach, former Wake Forest pitcher, two-year captain. He worked for the Twins in their complex league and then last year got promoted to assistant pitching coach with the Twins. He's another one of these guys that people are looking at and saying that this guy's going somewhere and he's going to be a pitching coach. He's going to be possibly, you know, like I don't know this for a fact, but I mean, like, these are the kind of guys that they start off so young, they end up being the young managers that are taking spots across the league, and he's here, you know. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I don't know what the link is, like, if it's just one of those things where, like, you know, he was like, his resume was a name in a stack and he just like hit it off with them and they hired him, you know, or if somebody knew him. But so I did hear Venable. I listened to some of his press conference and James Fegan kind of asked. So they have, like, Venable really wanted three pitching coaches, I guess, where it sounds like he just like thought this would be a benefit. So Matt Wise is, and look, I don't know if this is like a situation where they couldn't get rid of Matt Wise because he has money left on his deal. And like, we always talk about this, right? So they just made him but he's the bullpen coach. He's not the assistant pitching coach. And then the guy who you just said, Hearn, is the assistant pitching coach, you know, with the new pitching coach. So that's a little bit interesting. And then they really have like three coaches on the hitting side as well, because Tony Medina, is major league coach. But he's working with hitters.
Major league coach.
Yeah. The one that I find the most interesting is D'Onofrio. Like, it's just a lifer. You know, he's been in the Rockies org. I think it's really interesting. It sounds like him and Venable are like really close. Like, they're really close friends. Their families are friends. And so I was reading something where Chris D'Onofrio kind of told Will Venable, like, look, I'll never ask you for a job because of, like, you know, we're best friends or whatever. And like, I'm just like, I would never do that. But if you ever ask me for anything, like, I'm there, basically, essentially. So it seems like they, you know, they had a need for a field coordinator and Venable got one of his buddies, which, like, look, I'm totally fine with, because he's been working with the Rockies for 5 years. Like, you know, there's no reason that Chris D'Onofrio isn't qualified to, you know, coach outfielders. And it sounds like the field coordinator, you know, make spring training lineups, like, kind of goes over, okay, the hitters are doing this today, the pitchers are doing this today. You kind of give that to the manager and you're like, all right, this is like, you know, this is like the plan. You're like a structure guy. You go from group to group and whatever. And look, like, the manager does need somebody he trusts in that role. So if they're that tight, cool. Like, bring one of your buddies in that's qualified.
So Scott brings up here, he says, wonder if Ishbia's cash infusion is helping hire these good people. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. They said it was for infrastructure. So, I mean, that kind of fits the role, right?
Well, so there's a tweet out there from Barstool Dave that says, like, flat out that, like, he's heard that, like, Ishbia pushed for this. There's others that I've talked to, like, on the beat writer side that, like, swear that that's not true and that he's not really that involved. I don't know. I've never really had any like reason to doubt Dave when he goes public with stuff, because he knows a ton of people. I could totally see where the White Sox would tell the beat like that. That's not, I don't know. Like, I don't think it matters, right? But I think as we see money getting spent here, you know, I do think this is like happening in the future at some point, right? Like, at some point there will be a new owner that it seems like isn't going to be afraid to spend that much money. So this is going to be one of those things that hangs over like the org until he takes over. I feel like it's like, oh, is this an Ishbia move? Like, you know, for all the bagging, like, we do on on Jerry, and like it's deserved. Like,
it's was it a Kenny move or was it a Rick?
Right,
move?
Like, yeah,
it's a new version.
But if their scouts really believe in this guy and they think that he's better than other people do, it's the type of thing that Jerry has always been willing to do, right? Like if you're gonna get this like huge power hitter and have Japanese media and Japanese fans at the ballpark every night, and it's like $17 million, like, yeah, like these are like the types of things that he's usually okay with.
Yeah. So as Adrian brings up in the comments here, our very own Adrian White says, I think they said Hearn was a teammate with Shane Smith, which he was. And as blank name mentions, he was also a teammate with Gavin Sheets, although I don't think that if they talked to Gavin Sheets, that Gavin Sheets would have said probably not a whole lot nice about at least the last couple of years here with the White Sox. But you never know, I guess.
So the Sox are very familiar with Wake anyway, though, because they're in Winston-Salem.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think
they know Wake players pretty well.
They also have one of the top pitching development systems in college baseball.
Right.
Your thoughts, and this is like nothing to do with the White Sox other than the fact of this week, they also, and I didn't put this in the run through here, but there was this whole thing with MLB kind of tying the hands of dev people, saying that they could only use so much data. How much of this dev? Now, did you listen to the Carlos? Projection where he was talking about more development being done in college, which seems like a reasonable stretch here,
especially if they get rid of another level, like. Yeah. I could see where like the preference would be to go play college. That's what college baseball coaches are saying. Come here and develop. Because I mean, of course they're saying that, but like there's actually some truth to it. It's not just like them lying to teenagers and telling them to come to campus. Like you could make the argument that it's the better move.
I mean, what level can you get rid of? You need to have Arizona.
Yeah, my guess is my guess is low A.
They have to have somewhere else to go. You send those guys to Advanced Day, they're going to get
my thought is you extend the rookie ball, you make rookie ball like full season, and then you go AAA, AAA. But who knows? I mean, it's going to be a disaster. But that's kind of what they're talking about. But I mean, you also mean like the unifying, right? Like making everybody the same. Like, so essentially what it means is like the Dodgers, right? They could buy whatever they want because they're the Dodgers and they have all this stuff, right? Well, now it's like, you know, you could be a Hawkeye team or you could like, what's one of the other systems? Like, I don't really know. But so now if Major League Baseball like becomes like everybody has to have Hawkeye, then it'll be in everybody's parks, which is a benefit, right? But like, I don't know. Like, you should be able to spend whatever you want. Like, but the problem is there's so many teams who just like don't. And the White Sox have been better at this. You know, like a team like the Rockies, who they don't invest in infrastructure at all. I feel like as you get further in, you just like, you can't win anymore. Like, you cannot develop players anymore. Like, without this stuff, like without the stuff that everybody else has. Like, all the cameras, like the traject machines that the White Sox have, like you have like Hawkeye tracking data in all your parks. Like, and I wonder how long ago they knew about this too. Cause like they don't have it in Kannapolis, right?
They don't.
I'm sure they will
exactly
now.
Right.
I'm sure now they will. Cause it'll be everywhere.
I mean, maybe that was the reason why they didn't put it at Kannapolis,
right,
was
exactly
my thought.
Cause they knew this was coming down the line and Major League Baseball would just pay for it and put it in.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw this, and Uncle Ted's mentioning it here in the comments about the companies that are coming through. Diamond Sports Holdings is one of the major groups. They just came through and bought like two or three of the Houston Astros affiliates. I don't remember which one owns Kannapolis and which one owns Winston-Salem.
So are we going to get video in Asheville finally then? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, so I, full disclosure, I did go to Asheville this year to see our good friend Connor Griffin.
Yeah.
And now I kind of understand why they don't have a lot of video. That place is, you know, I mean, Babe Ruth played there for crying out loud, so you know it's old. It's just not it's not well laid out for broadcast. I mean, no. It really isn't. You know, I don't know. I heard that they were talking about renovating it. It was like going through like the Asheville, through the financials with the local government and such. I don't know what's going to happen though.
Yeah.
So,
but it's a good, it's like a good market, right? It's just a bad part.
Oh yeah. It's awesome. Like that place, like people don't follow baseball like you and I do, or people that are watching this, watching this stream, listening to this podcast. These people, most of the people that were at this park have no idea who Connor Griffin is.
Right.
Like I asked Colton, I was like, hey, Connor Griffin's playing up the road. And all the White Sox teams are out of town. Do you want to go see Connor Griffin? Me and my parents and him got in the car, went and saw Connor Griffin. And it was awesome. And pretty well packed for like a Tuesday or Wednesday night. It was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, it's not going to hurt the White Sox, obviously, because it's not like they're at the forefront. I think they're much better than it was. So this won't hurt them, but I do think it's like, you know, like instead of like praising like the organizations that do things right, we always like drag them down to be as like cheap as some of their counterparts, which kind of sucks.
Yep. You know, I mean, but we've talked about, you know, like what the job of the commissioner is to work for the owners.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's supposed to be like a governing body, you know, in theory, but everybody knows that's not what it really is.
Right. No, it's definitely not.
You want to move on to the bonus pool stuff here?
Yeah, that could be quick.
I mean, it doesn't have to be, but yeah. Sure.
So, well, because it's kind of in line with somebody asked about the Shane Baz trade, so we can get into that. Like, Mike Elias finally traded assets for a pitcher, and it's kind of a really unproven one. But there is a backstory there. Like, Mike Elias, I guess, wanted to take him when he was in Houston, and the Pirates took him at 12, so he's wanted him this whole time. Like, he gave up a lot in the trade, but in that was the 34th pick in the draft to the Rays, which comes with, like, $3 million in bonus pool space. So the Rays also have a competitive balance pick of their own. So... and I think that's it, but they basically, so they have $20 million to spend in the draft. So they're going to have the number one bonus pool. So the White Sox are going to be, they should be right around 18.5 million, in bonus pool space. The Rays are going to be right around 20. The Pirates actually too, will have more. The Pirates will have like 19 something too. So you got two teams with more money than the White Sox. Does it really matter? Probably not. Like, the Sox are just probably going to take Rokschalowski and, like, they'll pay him, like, whatever, right? In theory, though, like, if the second pick in the draft has more money than you, you know, they could offer Rokschalowski $11.5 million, right? And you could take him anyway and tell him to, like, you could call this bluff and be like, okay, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Go back to UCLA? Like, we have $11 million for you. Take it, you know, whatever. And he'd probably take it, right? But it's just a wrinkle. I didn't mean for the tweet to come off as, like, they're not going to take him now. It's just, I just find it interesting. Like, they, you know, the team with the number two pick has a ton of money. And they, the way they do that, like, they might just spread that money out, like, you know, with a bunch of different, where you get like multiple $3 and $4 million players instead. But yeah, that's the thing I found interesting. It's why I do think the White Sox right now should prioritize getting a competitive balance pick if they can get one. You get another pick, you'll move your pool up to about 20 million, which would be awesome, you know? So there were some Robert rumors we could get into that could be a possibility, for a pick, but you know, the competitive balance A and B picks can be traded all the way up until July's draft. So just like kind of something to monitor.
Yep. I'm not really too stoked about them grabbing that extra comp pick, but I mean, you know, nothing I can do about it. And, you know, like we had this conversation before stream, like, you know, and I'm sure most of the people here feel the same, that the fact that the White Sox are considered a major market and pay into profit, you know, profit sharing in the first place, I find to be absolutely ridiculous because they don't have that kind of capital behind them.
Well, and you give teams like the Cardinals and Orioles extra draft picks.
And the
Orioles right now, back-to-back years, I think, have traded their competitive balance pick. Like, they're like, well, we'll just trade this pick to get something because they're super valuable.
Yeah.
The bonus pool space alone is super valuable.
Yeah, that's a big thing, you know. So you can basically use that. Yeah, you got yourself a second round pick or whatever, you know.
Right, exactly.
All right, so we've got a request here from Trey. Says brief outfield talk and Tristan Peters. So the White Sox made a little trade.
Probably
acquired
for cash.
Tristan Peters for probably cash or a player to be named later. Who that?
I don't know.
Possibly
that
be,
always,
I
dude,
don't know.
That always freaks me out.
Yeah.
The player to be named later always freaks me out. Because it's
yeah.
like some international guy that I like. It's like, oh,
Yoiker Fajardo?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Although he was named in that trade. So for Cam Boeser, like, oh, man, that is. I mean, you know, like the guy said, you know, we'll be fine without Yoiker Fajardo. We won't miss him. But, you know, if you're essentially giving him away for free to somebody who's going to actively lose you games,
yeah,
maybe you will miss him.
He has been traded twice now, though, if that means anything.
Yeah, that's
what
true.
What do you
but,
think
I mean, that means he's got value, right?
What do you think about that, Wilson Contreras to the Red Sox? Sneaky decent, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he should do pretty well there, and he's, you know, I personally can't stand his personality, but he should fit in perfect there. you know?
Like they didn't really give up. They didn't really give up very much, and it could be a lot of impact potentially. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so Tristan Peters, I think the thing, like, you'd know more about. I mean, you've probably seen him play a bunch of times.
I have,
like, for
yeah.
Durham. Yeah, I mean, it seems like he can play center. He hits left-handed. To 105 WRC plus in AAA. He was like International League Player of the Month in June. So I think there's, I don't think he's like a total like nothing, nobody, but like, yeah. I also don't think that he's like on the big league team. He has options. You know, my guess is he's the center fielder in Charlotte. And we see him in the big leagues at some point because, you know, unless they try to outright him and we never see him at all. Right. But I think there are some skills I like that it's not just like a tweener corner. It is a center fielder. And we'll see. I mean, the White Sox roster is at 40 and their manager seemed to indicate that there's like multiple moves coming. So who knows? Like maybe he doesn't even stick by the time like we do another one of these shows.
Yeah. I mean, it could be also be like maybe like a Derek Hill gets launched, you know, a guy who's been sticking around for a little while to. And this is the one that absolutely blew my mind when we were talking about the Rule 5 protections, is that Jairo Iriarte is still around, and you saw how he pitched. I mean, unless they've got absolute faith in him to
my
be
guess
able
is
to
not
rebound.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that was a rough year.
I mean, there's still some guys on the 40, man, that, you know, James Hesterman said Ben Cowles. Like.
Yes, Ben Cowles. Yeah. There are plenty of guys that can still, this is like the weird thing, like that, especially they must really not have had any faith in Peyton Paulette to keep some of those guys over Paulette.
Right.
That's the only thing I can think.
I can just see like Brian Bannister in the corner of the room. Like he gets no extension. He does nothing for me. Like, you know, and whether that's true or not, like, you know, whatever, like, I don't think like Brian Bannister is like above criticism. Like it, like we've seen it. There's just like some guys that he doesn't like. But I mean, you know, he clearly was not a priority.
Yeah. Did Big Christmas make it through waivers?
Nobody's picked him up yet, so my guess is they're in trade talks.
Yeah, because they had what, like, they give you what, 3 days?
I think it's 7 days. But yeah, like, I don't know. Sometimes it's weird. Sometimes it's like the next day, and then sometimes it's he's traded for something. I didn't see. If anybody else saw, go ahead and throw that in. That's that Junkenzie Noel or whatever from Cleveland. I mean, that seems like a easy claim for the Rockies, right? Like, they should be claiming everybody.
You would think, but they don't really do that a whole lot. I mean, and, you know, like, when I heard Carlos say that when he used the example of the team who doesn't use analytics at all, and when he said Colorado,
yeah,
I cheered. I was like, oh, we finally gotten away from that tag. Ugh.
Well, so I don't know if you listened. So they just did AL West Farm Systems, and him and Badler debated, like, the Angels. Like the Angels always have the worst farm system in baseball because, like, all of their position players are in the big leagues already, as we always talk about. And then their system is just upside prep arms that aren't first rounders. So it's like, you know, it's just a bottom three system. And then Ben was like, no, the Rockies have the worst system, like, by far. And I didn't know it, like, was that bad. And then, like, you look at it and it's like, oh my goodness, like, they've had some high picks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just going to take a while to dig themselves out.
Yeah, they have a couple of guys, and that's it, you know.
Well, I mean, you need Ethan Holliday and Condon to be, like, awesome.
Yep. And I'm blanking the pitcher.
Yeah, they have pitcher. Yeah, Dolander.
Yes, Dolander.
Chase Dolander. Yeah.
He's up with the Rockies now, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, he hasn't obviously been lights out yet, but I mean, I would like to see him do something. That would be nice.
After seeing, like, what Shane Baz brought back in return, like, I wonder if Paul DePodesta is just going to be trading Dolander, like, right now with 5 years of control. Like, because what can you get for, like, it seems like controllable pitching is expensive. I'm very curious to see, like, what this means for Mackenzie Gore and what Edward Cabrera has 3 years left. Gore has, I mean, what is Gore going to cost if Shane Baz costs that? Because Baz is talented. He wasn't very good last year,
but he was talented.
He was bad in the minor league park. So clearly, like, the Orioles think this is a top of the rotation arm because they gave up a ton to get him.
Yeah, I mean, Grayson Rodriguez only got 1 year of, you know, his name?
He did. Yeah, it's a good player too. Yeah.
Yeah. Taylor Angel. Ward's
Taylor
good.
Ward, yeah.
But I mean, you know, yeah.
Are
they
that
only
right?
One
are,
year.
Are those two guys that different, Baz and?
I mean, there's a little bit more control for Rodriguez, so I guess
injuries, but they're both hurt. So
yeah, well, Grayson Rodriguez isn't anymore, but Baz has been since,
yeah,
you know, since basically, since he was in, I think, single A. Or,
did you see anywhere it was floating around the Chris Archer trade chart?
I saw it pop up, but I didn't.
It's like 30 players. Because the Rays traded Chris Archer for, you know, like, Tyler Glasnow, I think, and Shane Baz, and a couple other things. But then they traded Tyler Glasnow, and they traded all those guys.
It's like,
so then
the Bill
you
Walsh
just, like, keep multiplying
tree.
That. Yeah, like, it's crazy. But it's just, like, what the Rays do. I mean, the Rays made, like, their other trade I thought was not great for them too, the one that they made. Like, I love it for the Pirates because I've always kind of liked Brandon Lowe. He's not great defensively, but he's gonna smash in that ballpark. So that was good to, like, see Pittsburgh, like, trying. And I don't mind Houston's end of that trade either because they got 6 years of Mike Burrows, who shut down the Sox for like five innings last year, I believe. And then the guys Houston gave up, like, are prospects, but they're not great. Like, that's Tampa's end of it. So
yeah, well, I mean, that's
but who knows? Like, Jacob Melton will be awesome now that Tampa traded for him. So, because they're they're never wrong. So don't trade.
Yeah. Tampa. All right. So White Sox outfield, Trey, you asked for it. So let's dig into this. So you've got Luis Robert. who knows? I mean, that's a giant question mark whether he even makes it to spring training at this point.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do the Robert thing before we sign off.
So you got
more news there.
Andrew Benintendi.
I got news there too.
Yeah.
kind of.
You've got Derek Hill possibly. News on Derek Hill?
Well, he was ARB eligible and they tendered him, but he's also on a two-way deal, I think. So he's basically gets like 450K if in the majors, but he has options, so he can be like sent to Charlotte.
Yeah. So I mean there's that.
You got Brooks Baldwin in there.
Brooks Baldwin can play a little bit. Now we've been talking, like there's been lots of mentions of just trying to get some of these guys from the minors up to the majors. There's been talk of, Sam Antonacci playing some outfield. We now have Lenin Sosa, who's not doing anything, although I would be absolutely shocked to see him in the outfield. I mean, you generally don't want to see him with a glove in his hand in general.
It's got to be a trade, right? Like, guys like him, Corey Lee, these guys that are like out of options guys.
Ooh,
like,
Corey Lee in left field. Made that one play and you're like, oh, he can play outfield. And then the very next play, he just absolutely biffed it off the palm of his glove.
Yikes. and then like I think Everson Pereira is gonna play quite a bit.
Seems that way.
He's out of options. I think at a minimum he's like playing against lefties, I think. You know? I mean, I wonder if he's the center fielder if they trade Robert.
I kind of think so. And Trey brings up Kyle Teal here. I don't think that's going to happen.
It just doesn't seem like they have the appetite for playing either guy at another position. Carroll or Teal. DH, maybe, but no, like they're not going to put him somewhere else because catching's too hard.
Yeah, I mean, I like Teal's athleticism. I could see him in a pinch, just like how they did with Corey Lee last year, where they threw him in the outfield for like two outs and then pulled him. I could see that happening, but
I just don't know if
significant outings. No,
I don't think the bat plays at another spot. Yeah. He's the prospect that he is because he plays catcher. You know,
I feel that way as well. TJ asks if could you see Getz claiming Justin Henry Molloy, outfielder from the Tigers?
I mean, sure. They just like claim anybody they like at this point. I don't really know much about that guy. I know his name, but I don't know if he was any good last year. I mean, look, I'll never be surprised by Chris Getz waiver claims because I think there's just people in that giant front office that are like, hey, I kind of like him. It's like, okay, put in a claim. Like, they've churned the roster like a ton. Brian Ramos, does Brian Ramos, like, is he on the team in spring training? I lean no at this point. Like, because if you're going to add, like, even if you add one corner guy, like, say you get a veteran corner outfielder in here, I mean, I guess Ramos could be on the. I don't know how much more they're gonna add. Is my thing.
Yeah, James asks here: is analytically, is there a big difference between Caro and Teal? I mean, not huge. I think that there are weaknesses and positives to both of their games, and it's kind of one of those things you have to choose which one, you know. Which one you want to roll with, you know, at some point, but I don't think that point is right now.
No, I don't either. Yeah, all I mean, good. I think Teal's the better athlete. I think Caro struggled with framing in the big leagues, but I have no reason to believe that that's an issue. I think pitchers really like throwing to Caro, and I think his bat's going to improve. Like, so yeah, I would just like keep both of those guys, even if that means like they play part time and somebody sits all the time. Like, I like that better than trading either of them right now. So going along with this outfield, the elephant in the room is, to me, it's like not even Luis Robert right now, because I think that happens at some point. It's Andrew Benintendi. So from what I've gathered, the White Sox would love to move on from Andrew Benintendi to the point where like they would take a bad contract in return. They haven't been able to like match up on that, though. It's something like me and Ian kind of talked about, like I think in an earlier show, Like, I would love to. And if you guys have like names here, we're probably going to be on for just a little bit longer here, that you want to put in the chat, like, go for it, right? But somebody's like underwater bad pitching signing that's got like 2 years left at similar money for Benintendi, I think makes sense, because like you could just make a guy your number five starter and maybe get better, and then you could just, you know, dump Andrew Benintendi and play somebody else. Because I do think Benintendi's presence like will prevent them from playing two catchers consistently. Because I like, for like, Benintendi's definitely playing against righties. He's probably your DH, which means you can't play the two catchers at the same time. So yes, yeah. I agree. Like, not having him on the team would be ideal. And then Luis Robert, I mean, I'm pretty sure you guys all saw the tweet from Bob Nightingale today. Like, next order of business, White Sox would like to trade Luis Robert. Mentioned that they're like in active discussions, I think that was what he framed it, with the Mets and the Reds, two teams that we've heard before. And that the White Sox were looking for pitching depth in the deal. The Reds have a competitive balance B pick. That would be what I would target, along with pitching depth. I don't know what that looks like on the Mets side. But if Bob's pushing it, like, I wouldn't be surprised now if Robert goes here at some point.
Yeah, I mean, you're not getting a comp pick from the Mets.
No, you're not.
So I'm going to bring up this super chat here from 123 P. Lowry. Bears going to the playoffs and the Sox sign Murakami. Gentlemen, what is this feeling in my chest? And I will read this with a smile on my face because I'm an adult and I can handle football rivalries.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter to me.
Well, here's the thing. Like, if you watch the Lions today, it seems like the Bears-Packers 3 is happening in a couple of weeks. So
yeah, insane.
Yeah. It'll probably be at Soldier again, but like, yeah, they're going to be
playing. That is true.
They have a comp pick, but they can't trade it.
They can't trade that one. Yeah.
You can only trade the competitive balance picks. Yes. For Jordan Hicks, done. Taiwan Walker, yeah. Done. Fine.
Yeah.
I would do either of those. Like, those would be great. Cause like Taiwan Walker can pitch every fifth day for me. They can,
yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. Not bad. He's not, I mean, you know,
and then you can just have Benintendi gone.
Yeah. I wanted the White Sox to grab him, years ago when he was just like floating out there in the ether with coming off of TJ and everything. I thought he would have been a great reclamation project, but you know, somebody else ended up picking him up. I don't remember who at this point, but maybe the Mets.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So that would be, you know, and then if they do trade Robert, I mean, obviously they don't have a center fielder. So yeah, I mean, we'll figure it out. I mean, I don't know. Do you think any part of this deal is, Jerry, it's $17 million. It's fine. We're going to dump Robert soon. It's the, you know, you're going to come out $3 million ahead. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't, who knows at this point, you know?
And there is, so what do you think about this? So I've heard from some buddies today and people that are like, well, now that you've signed this Japanese guy, just keep Robert and try to win this year.
I've heard that.
Which, like, I get it, right? But I still just, like, I think this season will be fun. I think they can be like fun quasi contenders in the AL Central because I don't think the division's that good. And you'll have these young guys that you'll like. I don't think they have enough pitching to compete over 162. And like, so it doesn't matter. Like, Robert's not going to be on your next really good team. So if you can get some stuff that you like for him, like, I understand doing it still.
Yeah. Wouldn't be opposed. We have anything else going on here?
I don't believe so. It does seem like baseball general managers love deadlines. It sounds like Christmas is one. So we might get some moves here over the next few days, just across the league.
Yeah, I mean, they said that I've seen several things that have said that there's expected moves coming up here in the near future. So
doesn't it seem like Boston was waiting on Murakami to make this move for Wilson Contreras?
Yeah, I find it kind of interesting. You know, so the EMI thing, we actually had this conversation earlier this week about whether or not the Cubs were sitting around waiting for EMI to make his decision, and that was kind of holding up some of the other stuff. Bupa asked for a Kopech reunion. Oh, I don't know about that.
Mm, Yeah, I don't think so.
Here's something we could talk about. So the tweet from or the article from Passan earlier this week that said that the White Sox were a front runner, or at least being semi aggressive in like a bunch, you know, a long list of pitching names.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think they're probably interested in some of the bottom names on that list. Like, you know, like my guess is more so Michael Lorenzen than Lucas Giolito. Like the guy that I would be the most interested in, and I don't know if they could even afford him, would be like maybe like Tyler Mahle, right, from Texas, who used to be in Cincy. Because I just think I think if he's healthy, he can pitch like a number two starter. He's just never healthy, right? So like it is like a bit of an upside swing. I think like a Michael Lorenzen as your fifth starter,
I've always
probably
liked him.
Where they're going, you know, something like that. So if that's considered mid tier pitching, then yeah, sure, I buy it. I have no reason to not believe Passan, but it does seem like another pitcher's coming. Yeah, can JJ Bleday play center field?
Because
that's another name. So I had heard JJ Bleday. I had heard everybody everybody cover your ears. Michael Conforto. I don't know if they want another. My guess is they do want another lefty bat for right field, at least to face righties.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like personally, I'd like to see him in a corner.
Yes.
More so than center, just my personal. But you know, it's not that he can't play physically, play center field. I watch Luis Robert out there,
yeah, he's awesome
playing in center field, and he's just not that. And I like that.
Yeah, you like having a guy there that's actually good.
Yeah, I mean, I want a guy that can go out there and go get something. No matter where it is in between, you know, in between gap to gap.
Yeah, Chris, I did see that I saw like on Twitter they were mentioned as possibly in, there's like a pitcher, Kona something or another from Japan, that's like the fourth guy basically, that the White Sox could potentially have some level of interest in him too. I think that's like a righty soft tosser with not many strikeouts, like that sort of thing. So I mean, I do think the next big one, like not for the White Sox, but in general, Tetsuya Imai, I think is the second. So you kind of saw how this process went with Murakami. Like tomorrow's the deadline. He took a physical. He'll be announced like tomorrow. So I don't know if that's going to be like a New Year's Day signing for Imai, or if they'll do it like the 30th or the 31st. My prediction is that's the Cubs' big move is Imai. And that's like what the holdup has been.
Yeah, I could see that.
And the other guys just kind of fall in accordingly. Valdez, you know, the lefty from Philly, like all your other guys that are available.
So now that the White Sox have Murakami, does that mean that they're officially off the market for Imai, since he said he wasn't going to sign with a guy with a team with a Japanese player?
I think the fact that Imai is going to get $100 million probably takes the White Sox out of the market.
What we said about Murakami.
It's true. I did see an O'Hearn question. I think it was from Adrian. Yes, Adrian, I would imagine they're out on O'Hearn now, because like this dude's going to be playing first base.
Yeah, that would make sense to me. Classic Rickon misdirection there, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wonder how long they've been seriously, because I did, like, it's been weird, like, some of what Chris Getz has said. Like, Chris Getz is like, oh, we've been really busy, like, doing free agency. And it's like, what? Like, what are you talking about? Because it's like, all I hear from people is, like, how they're just going to sign, you know, like, the Austin Slaters of the world for $1 million. Like, how hard can you be focused on free agency? Well, I mean, now if you've been like trying to woo this Japanese first baseman, like, he clearly wasn't lying, but I just think this was like unexpected.
Jamie asked, where would you put Mune in our prospect rankings? I mean,
so do we rank? Are we ranking him? I guess I need to like,
I don't
figure that out, because he is like rookie eligible. I really don't want to.
But he's not PPI
But eligible, he can win. So. But he can win Rookie of the Year.
He could. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we need to. That's a discussion. We'll discuss that. I mean, he's in the group of the top five guys. Like,
you would think. You would think. Can Antonacci and Mydroth be in the same lineup?
I have strong thoughts on this. I think me and Ian are aligned. I wish we disagreed on this, but we don't. I think no. I don't think they can be.
Yeah, unless I will preface that with saying if Antonacci cannot prove that he can play in left field with a modicum of power,
right?
I would say no. That's just my thought.
No, I think they could potentially be on the. They could both be on the roster, maybe. I just don't think you can count on having both as right. Like. You know, you can't have one at third and one at second every day and have 1,200 plate appearances and 10 homers. You can't do that.
Yeah, and, you know, like some of those same naysayers that like to bash you for some of your tweets and such, that, you know, have been giving Antonacci the business as well, you know, because several people that work for this this fine establishment have been glazing Antonacci for a year now. I mean, he looks pretty good.
Yeah, he's a borderline top 100 prospect. I struggle with guys like that. They're just like the lack impact guys.
Yeah. Tom says, sounds like Mune didn't get the long-term money he wanted, so took a nice pillow deal contract, yeah. Basically.
Clearly.
Yeah. I mean,
he's guaranteed himself like $34 million.
Yeah, you chalk that. If you're a White Sox fan or in the White Sox front office, you chalk this up as a W. I mean, it's a no lose situation for the White Sox. They only given out, you know, I mean, technically, you know, highest AAV in White Sox history at $17 million a year, but it's still only $34 million. So,
right.
That's a W.
Yeah. So it's when what? It's like luck is like when preparation meets opportunity. That's kind of what this is. Like, you went and scouted the guy. Maybe you didn't think you had a chance. The market comes back to you, and now you're prepared to like capitalize, and they did.
Yeah, and we had this conversation on Twitter earlier today. I don't necessarily think that I think that having feet in Asia. And eyes in Asia, you know, on all these players. And also, you know, let's hope he hits a bunch of home runs as well. It's not, neither one is necessarily the priority here, but, you know, obviously we're hoping that we get a foothold over there in that market.
Yeah. Hopefully this is the first of many.
How about this? At least, it's not the first one. It's not the only one for the next, 21 years or whatever. Let's hope it's not that long. Are you good? You good for me to walk this thing out? All right. You have been watching/listening to the Future Sox podcast. If you are listening to this in podcast form, know that you can find us every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on YouTube and the Purple app. You can also find this podcast along with all of our written content at futuresox.net. If you are looking for White Sox prospect highlights, you can find them on X at Future Sox and now also here on our YouTube channel. If you love the content, want to support us here at Future Sox, there's a link to our Patreon in our channel description and at futuresox.net. You can also toss up a super chat on our YouTube stream. Also, don't forget to like this stream and subscribe with notifications so you know when we're going live while helping us in the World Wide Web algorithms. As mentioned, Future Sox is part of the Just Baseball Media Network. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He's James Fox at JamesFox917. We appreciate all of you guys. Thank you so much for hanging out tonight. Happy Murakami. Thank you so much for... hopping in the chat and driving the conversation, everybody. As Carrie mentions, Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy holidays. Thank you for hanging out. We will catch up with you guys maybe next week. We haven't quite decided yet. We might bump it to a Monday, but we will keep you guys we'll throw it up on Twitter somewhere. Yeah. Thanks, guys. We appreciate it. Happy holidays. Thank you.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.